everybody. I'm Karen Hartglass. You're listening to It's All About Food, Part 2, on August 5th, 2014. Oh, gosh, I need to breathe deeply here because that was kind of exciting little back and forth there a moment ago. Let me know what you think of that and anything else we talk about here. You can email me at info@realmeals.org. info@realmeals.org. Right, now let's relax, shall we, and start talking about my favorite subject, food, with Jenna Hamshaw, CCN, a former book editor turned clinical nutritionist. She has contributed to Veg News, O Magazine, Whole Living Daily, Food 52, and other publications. Her website is choosingraw.com. Hi, Jenna.
Hi, Karen. How are you?
Good. Love your book.
Thank you so much.
Perfect.
I'm so glad you like it.
I haven't had a cookbook author on in a while. I do love talking about food, and I love talking about delicious food, and people need to know every day how to make healthy, delicious food. But I've been concentrating on the uglier side of food for a while, and let's just talk about delicious, healthy food.
Yeah, absolutely. Let's talk about it.
What's your story?
Well, the food in my book is vegan food, obviously.
Yay.
It's 125 vegan recipes. A lot of them are raw, as the title suggests. I'm not a strict raw foodist the way some people are, so I eat plenty of cooked food. I'll pretty much eat anything so long as it's vegan. But I call myself a raw foods enthusiast, which essentially means that I love raw food recipes and I get a big kick out of preparing them. So there's a big emphasis on raw food in the book. And the idea behind that is not to encourage anyone to go raw, and it's not necessarily to encourage anyone to go vegan if that's not what they're hoping to do. But it is an effort to encourage everyone to eat more vegetables, to consider plant-based food. You know, if you've ever thought about doing Meatless Monday or just cooking more vegetarian dinners but you kind of don't know where to start, I really wanted to give people an accessible, fun, inspiring resource. And, of course, the emphasis is also on foods that are healthful. So whole foods, foods that are made with sort of minimally prepared ingredients, lots of really healthful choices like quinoa, vegetables, nuts, seeds, and, you know, a sort of an emphasis on foods that are nourishing as well as really delicious and tasty.
Well, the challenge I think all of us know is that people need to find their kitchens.
Yes.
And I haven't said that in a while, but I need to say it because that's, you know, I was talking to Matt Ball earlier, and how do we work our activism to encourage people to go vegan? And how many times have I heard people say, "I can't be like you.
Yeah.
I can't do that."
Yeah.
And I think it's just a fear of not knowing where their kitchen is.
Absolutely.
What to do with it when they find it.
Yeah. I mean, I think it's twofold. I think that's a huge part of it. It's just not that people are so out of touch with preparing their own food that they kind of don't remember how. And to them, the idea of cooking vegan food just seems so exotic and so out there. But I think also people, you know, that's part of what people are so scared of when they're afraid of going vegan. It's the idea that they're going to have to be home making everything from scratch. So the question becomes, well, what do I do if I love restaurants? What do I do if I love to travel? What do I do if I have a really active social life and I don't want to be home, you know, boiling quinoa all the time? And I think one thing that's really important to remind people is veganism is now a lifestyle that is not only accessible within the confines of your kitchen. It is becoming so much easier to take veganism out there in the real world and enjoy vegan food in restaurants, find options on menus all over the place, find vegan grocery items at mainstream supermarkets. You know, when I went vegan, it was over 7 years ago, and it was much harder at the time to eat in restaurants and or to find, you know, something like Earth Balance at any grocery store that wasn't a health food store or Whole Foods. Now I can walk into any Safeway and find something like Earth Balance or soy milk or almond milk or anything like that. So I think what people also need to remember is, sure, you know, it's important to connect with food in the kitchen and in the home space, but veganism also is not a request that you kiss your social life goodbye. You can be vegan out there, out and about, and it doesn't have to be a choice that makes you siphon yourself off from friends, coworkers, et cetera.
You know, it's funny you mentioned Safeway. I don't know if you were listening to the program just before this, but we were talking about how Safeway shareholders rejected an anti-GMO proposal. So we're glad for Safeway for having all the wonderful soy milks and faux meats and all the vegan alternatives. That's really wonderful, but not happy about the anti-GMO proposal that they rejected. But oh well. Let's move on. You mentioned that you had done a moment of eating all raw, and I did it too for about 2 years. And
oh wow! That's a good long rough.
It is, and I really enjoyed it. But you know, I love the way I eat now, and that's a whole food, plant based, vegan diet, lots of greens, cooked and raw food. But in thumbing through your book, I reminded myself of a couple things I used to make that I don't make anymore, and I really need to make them again, and that is flaxseed crackers.
Mm-hmm.
So wonderful and not difficult at all, especially since, I mentioned this a while ago, but I have this gas oven at home, and I didn't know for 10 years that it had a dehydrator option on it.
Oh, wow.
And I even had one of those Excalibur dehydrators during my raw period right next to the oven that had a dehydrator option, and I didn't know it. Anyway,
that
so
is
I can dehydrate. And the other recipe is the buckwheaties.
Yeah, absolutely. That's sort of a staple. I feel like that's like a raw food staple dish. You know, there are a couple of in my book, I list sort of 15 essentials at the beginning, and I was trying to think of all the dishes that are just kind of like raw food essentials or greatest hits or what have you, and flax crackers was one of them, cashew cheese was another one, a sort of basic green smoothie, zucchini pasta. I mean, I feel like these are the dishes that you're going to meet very quickly if you start getting into raw food, and they're sort of some of the most foundational recipes of a raw food diet.
Right. Buckwheaties with like a nut milk on top of it. It's just so delicious.
Oh, yeah. Absolutely delicious. Such a good breakfast.
Right. I'm sorry. Move over Captain Crunch and cow's milk. Blech.
Right. Exactly. Well, and as soon as you get used to the way something like buckwheaties tastes, it's amazing how you'll go back eating conventional cereal and it just tastes so terrible. You know, it tastes so sugary and just so not wholesome. One of the things I really like about raw food in particular is that I think it forces you to kind of connect with whole foods in this very intimate, powerful way. And it can really train your taste buds to start appreciating just the beauty of really unadulterated food. And that was one thing that I took away from raw food very strongly. And it's one of the things that has really stayed with me.
I think it's easiest to introduce more raw foods during the summer.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a good time to do it because the summer, when you're in places like where I am in New York, where it's hot and we sweat and it's important to stay hydrated, you can hydrate so well with raw foods that are filled with water.
Absolutely.
And this idea, you know, it's great to drink water, but it's better to get it in your food.
Yeah, well, or it's important to also get it in your food. You know, I mean, I think, of course, it's important to hydrate with real water. But, yeah, it's true. I mean, I think a lot of folks eat very dehydrating diets. You know, it's a lot of sort of refined grains and, you know, meats and salty foods, prepared foods, microwave foods. You know, if you think about that, they're all really dehydrating. And raw foods are just so rich in water, which is great.
Okay, you have a section in your book on myths and misconceptions, which is so important. And in this world of the Internet, where people can find any bit of information and latch onto it, some of it's good and some of it's not so good. And the myths, boy, some of them just go on and on and on and on, no matter what we do to combat them.
Yeah.
But you have a few good ones here. So a lot of people think about detoxing and doing a detox. What do you think about detoxes?
Oh, I mean, I don't think it is. I don't really think there is such a thing. I mean, there is, from a medical standpoint, such a thing, and that is detoxification from very particular kinds of drugs. So, yes, it is possible for people who are addicted to certain kinds of narcotics to go through a detoxification process, or who have been, you know, exposed to certain kinds of toxins. But when it comes to the idea that our bodies are crawling with, you know, every single particle of bad air we've ingested since we were kids, and remnants and sort of sludge from all these years of terrible diets and booze and caffeine, and that if we somehow eat green vegetables, we will purge these terrible toxins from our bodies. That is really a myth. That is a myth that has been created in certain health circles. And the idea that somehow, you know, detox is a part of the process of going vegan, which is something you hear all the time. You know, as you go vegan, you'll detox all the years of dairy out of your system and you'll feel stuffy and get headaches. That's really no true. There's no validated scientific evidence to support this. Of course, a lot of people do feel differently as they adopt plant-based diets, and that makes a lot of sense. For most people, they're eating, they're getting a lot more hydration. They're eating a lot more fibers, so there can be some GI disruption at the beginning. And some people might feel headachy or a little bit tired because they're used to eating really sugary or stimulating foods. And if they start to eat a healthier diet, of course, they're not getting quite as much as of the sugar and the stimulation, but there is no detoxification of sort of, you know, insidious toxins happening. And well, as much as that's kind of a fun idea, I don't really think there's much to it.
Well, even if there are things we want to remove from our bodies, it doesn't happen quickly. It takes a long time. I know personally, I went through a romp with advanced ovarian cancer and I had chemotherapy, and it took a year to feel, to be 100% rid of all the side effects of chemotherapy.
Yeah, of course.
Now, you know, what was it? Was it the toxins that were still in my body? I don't know what it was, but it took a year. And that was a year on a super healthy whole foods, plant-based, vegan diet, eating a lot of green foods. It takes time. So these 1 week, 2 week, whatever detoxes, they're a joke.
Absolutely. And also the idea that it's, you know, it's healthy to just drink juice for a week. It's really not. I mean, metabolically and in terms of nutrition needs, that's not healthy for our bodies. We need a lot more nourishment than that. And, you know, I also, one thing I say to my nutrition clients all the time, because I'm still practicing nutritionist, is this. It's actually really easy to just drink juice for a week. Typically, it's some packaged cleanse that you bought, you know, from some provider. And they deliver all the juices to you, and you, all you have to do is put them in your fridge and drink them when you want them, you know, and or pre-prepared foods or whatever. That's really easy. Someone is holding your hand and walking you through it. What's really hard is teaching yourself how to eat everything in moderation, but eat healthily overall, day after day after day, how to prepare the food yourself, how to prep and cook and pay attention to your diet. That's really hard, and you're not going to learn that from some sort of one-week detox fat diet. It's the kind of thing that you have to invest time and energy in teaching yourself.
Now, you mentioned in the beginning of the book that you're from a Greek background.
I am, indeed.
And I can't help but think of the movie My Big Fat Greek Wedding.
Yeah. So the funny thing about that is my yaya, my grandmother, actually said those very words to me when I told her that I was going to stop eating red meat, because I stopped eating red meat as a child. I went
vegetarian. That's okay, later. I'll make lamb. Did she say
yeah,
that?
Yeah, and that, I mean, she actually said, well, you'll still eat lamb, right? So, I mean, that movie, while it abounds with stereotypes, a lot of them are very close to the truth.
That's too funny. We say that a lot. We love the actress Andrea Martin, and she was the one who said that in the movie when the future son-in-law, or she was an aunt of the bride-to-be or something, and he said, I'm a vegetarian, and she said, what? No meat? That's okay. I'll make lamb.
Yeah, exactly.
We say that all the time, and it's true. Oh, my goodness. But she's since learned the difference,
yes.
I imagine. There's a lot of wonderful Greek foods, actually, that are vegetarian and raw.
Absolutely. I think it really depends, too, on the kind of Greek food. You know, I think in popular imagination at this point, the Greek or Mediterranean diet is all like, you know, cannellini beans and tomatoes and olive oil and greens and fish. And that is certainly a huge part of Greek food. The Greek food that I was raised on was the sort of heavier home cooking side of Greek food. So it was a ton of lamb and, you know, keftede burgers and kasseri cheese and lots of pastry. I mean, Greek food can also be incredibly rich. But I think if you're looking at particular kinds of Greek food, yeah, of course, there are wonderful salads and lots of delicious sort of dips and spreads and mezze or appetizers. So, yeah, it's really easy to eat at a Greek restaurant if you eat a plant-based diet, that's for sure.
Now, you also mentioned early on in your book your story where you it finally acknowledged you had an eating disorder.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
And you've made peace with your food, I'm
assuming. I have, and it took a long time. My journey into plant-based eating was a huge part of it, you know, which is interesting because I think oftentimes it's assumed that people with eating disorder histories really shouldn't be eating any kind of diet that's selective, if you will, or excludes any foods, because eating everything is supposedly, you know, an important part of the recovery process. But mm-hmm. for me, actually, connecting with the ethics and the meaning and the value of my food through veganism really invested food with a particular kind of beauty that I had never seen in the food I ate before, and it was what helped me recover. And I think that recognizing, too, that my food choices went outside of just me and me alone, you know, that they impact the environment and animals and the food system at large, that helped me see eating as a way of making choices that could actually do active good in the world. And the effect of all these things was to really shift my relationship with food away from being this very kind of guilty, shameful thing that I had always felt about eating, to being an act that I felt a lot of joy around. It was a long process. I had an eating disorder for a very long time, and I relapsed a couple of times. But really, after I discovered plant-based diet, I was and I have remained relapse-free, which is really wonderful.
That's a beautiful story, and I'm glad.
Thank you.
Yeah, the relapse thing is kind of the scary part.
Sure, it is. And I mean, you know, eating disorder recovery, as I always say to people, it's a long, winding road. It's not really, we sort of want there to be a clear end point one day, you know, a before and after. I am recovered, and I was sick then, I'm recovered now. But for most people, it's an ongoing process. And I think everyone who's had eating disorder has to remember that relapse is always possible. So we have to remain accountable and keep all of our tools that we mm-hmm. use to support ourselves in place, whether that's therapy or having your friends, your partner, your family help to keep you accountable. So I always am very conscious and aware of the fact that a relapse could happen, but that's also part of why I pay so much attention to my relationship with food, and I really work to take care of my body through food, and I, you know, have a lot of tools in my life that I've created to help me stay healthy.
This is something that applies to everything. Everyone has their challenges. Everybody has their issues. And the ones that thrive and succeed are the ones that have a toolbox, the ones that have a strategy, the ones that are mindful and recognize what's going on.
Absolutely. People who are sort of conscious of the problem. Because you're right, you know, whether it's an eating disorder or an addiction or some kind of, you know, some sort of tendency, whatever difficulty it is that you face in your life, having that set of tools is so important. So, yeah, I really appreciate what you say, and I think it goes well beyond food.
Now, I'm really into prevention when it comes to illnesses, and we do see a lot more eating disorders, especially amongst young women. Do you have any ideas on how we might prevent those from happening?
Absolutely. Well, I mean, a couple of things. You know, I think one thing that's so important is we live in a culture where it's just very okay to openly talk about body and appearance. And I think there's probably too much conversation surrounding this. You know, what triggered my eating disorder was just, you know, teasing as a kid, and also the fact that people just felt like it was okay. I had been a very healthy kid growing up. I gained a little bit of weight when I was just about to enter my teen years, like a lot of preteens do, and it probably would have come off with time, but I was going through a phase where I was a little heavier, and the commentary is really what triggered it. And I think one thing that I've noticed through recovery, through relapsing, is that there is just ongoing commentary about the way people feel so at liberty to talk about the way other people look, and I think that really needs to change, and that sort of body commentary needs to be curtailed in a big way. I also think that, you know, encouraging young women to take pleasure in their food is so important. I can't tell you, I hear from a lot of people who have had eating disorders through my website because I write about mine so often, and so many of them say that what started their, you know, relationship with food on a bad track, whether that was an eating disorder or binge eating, you know, anorexia, whatever, was that at some point someone had made them feel bad about their appetite or bad about the fact that they like to eat.
I want to end on a happy note. So we've come to the end of the program, Jenna, and I thank you for writing Choosing Raw. It's beautiful, with great pictures by Hannah Kaminsky and delicious, delicious recipes. And I'm happy to hear about your journey. Find out more about Jenna at choosingraw.com. Thank you, Jenna.
Thank you.
Okay. And thank you, my listeners. It's been another episode of It's All About Food. Join me at responsibleeatingandliving.com. Send me an email at info@realmeals.org. And everyone together, have a delicious week. Bye.